let's just have a group nose blow, a group wiping of the tears, you know. So that's our beautiful, stop it. Husband crying in the front row. That's our beautiful Nadine, who doesn't get to come here very often because she lives in Las Vegas. And as you may have noticed, there's a little more of her to love right now. May I tell, I know it's on Facebook. Nadine is pregnant with twins, with twin boys. Yeah. It's very exciting. If it had been a boy and a girl, I was going to suggest that you could use our church rabbit's names, Emma and Waldo. You can still have Waldo if you like it, but no. Anyway. So the message today is called Love All, Serve All. And that has been resonating with me quite a bit because of going to India and being at the Gandhi Ashram, where it's written all over the place, love all, serve all. It's very much part of the culture there. And also because, as Rita said in the announcements, that we are bringing the Jai Jagat children, who are a group of children from the slums near the Gandhi Ashram. They're coming to the States and other places in the world to perform. They're performing in Redondo Beach on the 11th, and some of us are taking a bus down there. But then they're going to come and be in the center on May 12th. And in promoting them and looking at their videos and learning about the work that they do, very much their motto is love all, serve all. It's not all about the show. The show actually is an inspiring show about a world that becomes compassionate within the next 50 years and how that happens. But also the work that they do in their schooling and in their rehearsal process and in their acts of service that they do are all about love all, serve all. And I had this thought about this topic, and I thought, wow, that's going to be like a really, really feel-good kind of message, you know? It's going to be lovely. And then I paused when I thought about the word all. That's a lot to ask. So serve all, you know, there's a lot of need out there, and there's only maybe one of us. How do we serve all? And then the business about love all. Have you ever met anybody who's not really completely lovable? It happens from time to time. But then I thought about it a little bit deeper, and I thought about how really all seems like it's the problem, loving all and serving all. It seems like it can deplete us. It seems like it can be too hard. But really, all is a solution, because love all, serve all is supposed to catapult us into the awareness of the absolute reality that we always talk about here, that there is only one of us here. And in the words of Scripture, David Carrigan, where are you? David Carrigan is off with the children, wild thing. He was going to quote a Bible verse. He was going to quote a Bible verse for me. Here he comes. Because, so you see, I worked really hard on this, and I still don't know what I'm doing. I told somebody before the service, I said, I'm not really prepared today, but don't tell anyone, okay? So anyway, I didn't have time to write down my Bible verse. So David's going to come forward and talk about this thing from the Gospels that I think clarifies what love all, serve all means.
Okay.
Right there, speak into the microphone.
Right. You know what?
What?
You have heard it said, love your friends and hate your enemies.
It's not that one, it's the first one.
It's the other one.
Yeah, do the first one.
All right.
Okay.
Never mind.
Okay.
Well, love your enemies.
Yeah. No, don't do that. No. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Whatever you do unto the least of these, my little ones, you do also to me.
Thank you. Yeah. So David and Jesus did a good job of explaining this sort of Gandhian principle of love all, serve all. If we love and serve someone, it is as if we are serving everyone. It is as if we are loving everyone. So that to me is what love all, serve all means. And yet, because of the world that we live in, because of who we are, I still want to talk about the times when it's hard to love and when it's hard to serve, when it's challenging. Because it would be one thing if it was easy to love everybody. You know, people always say they want unconditional love, but then when a condition pops up, a condition that you have to bypass and actually love in spite of the condition or because of the condition, then people are kind of, we back up and we say, oh, maybe not so much. I know I've done that a time or two. So it seems to me people that are difficult to love have always been around. If there were no difficult people to love in biblical times, Brother Jesus, the great example, would never have said,
love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for those who use you despitefully and persecute you, that you may be children of your Father who is in heaven, for he makes his sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends his rain on the just and the unjust.
Good job. Okay, then. All right. So, you know, and the one that I'm going with that one is, bless those who curse you. Bless those who curse you. I don't know that anybody here has ever had an actual curse levied upon them, but those who get in your way, those who seem like they're against you. I was actually looking, I was Googling online for curses that you could give back if somebody curses you, because our knee-jerk reaction is if somebody curses us, we want to curse them back, right? If somebody is critical of us, we want to criticize them back. A lot of the curses that I looked at were not really church-friendly, but here's one that you can. Here's one that you can use. If somebody curses you, you can say, I curse you back. May the YMCA song say, stay stuck in your head for 6 months. That is quite a curse. What I want to talk about, though, is, you know, the criticism. Because often when somebody is critical of us, it feels like they are cursing us. Has anybody here ever been criticized? Okay, and has anybody here ever enjoyed it? Yeah, I know, I have to say I'm developing a new relationship with criticism, but we'll get to that in just a moment. You know, often when we are criticized, it starts this trigger within us. We start thinking, this person is criticizing me. We either defend ourselves to that person because we think that person must be wrong while we secretly believe that they're right, or we wouldn't have to get defensive, right? Or we start to believe what the person has said and say, wow, I need to change. I am not enough. I am inadequate. This person is rejecting me. There's something wrong with me, right? Does that sound familiar to everybody? How we react when we are criticized. What one of my newer spiritual teachers, Rupert Spira, says is that we are constantly in this vastness of absolute reality, this vast absolute reality, consciousness that became existence so that it could experience itself. In this vastness, we are constantly using others as objects to either lift ourselves up or put ourselves down. And I don't mean that in a bad way. We've probably used people as objects. All of us have used people as objects. For example, if somebody is critical of me, all of a sudden I think it is that person's responsibility to either change or to validate me or to like me. I'm giving that person the power to put me down, and so I want to change them. I am using that person as an object of validation or invalidation for myself. You get that? You get that? Again, has anybody ever done that? Oh, David has. Okay. Yeah. It's so wonderful to notice that, to notice when we are doing that, to notice when we are using other people to either aggrandize ourselves or we're using other people to judge ourselves and to keep ourselves playing small, because there is a different way. There is a better way. There is a way of peace and a way of harmony and a way that blesses everybody, a way that loves and serves all. I mentioned before to you that I have quite a different relationship with criticism than I used to. And I know this because of last Sunday when there were people sitting in the middle of the church and they walked out in the middle of the sermon. And I don't really know what it was about, but all I could feel for them was compassion. I assumed that it was that perhaps they didn't like what I was saying. It may have been that I kind of, when I was doing Jesus coming out of the tomb, I looked a little bit like a drag queen in my body language. It may have been that. It may have been anything. But what I felt for them was such compassion, like, oh, you guys, you didn't get the Easter service you wanted. I'm so sorry. And I have a long relationship with criticism because it seems to me that has been one of my life's paths, is to be criticized because I keep picking careers where there's a lot of criticism. I was a nurse, and I worked in psychiatry, where, now talk about not church-friendly, some of the things I've been called I wouldn't repeat. And, you know, I worked with cancer patients who are not feeling well and who are often critical of the medical staff. And I worked in medical customer service, where if people's devices were failing and they could die, they often became, oddly, quite critical of the person on the other end of the phone. Oh, and then there's theater. There's theater where, and music, you know, where people are constantly telling you you're not getting jobs for auditions, and you're thinking, oh, I must be less than. There's something wrong with me. It feels like criticism. And then there's church. There's church, which is, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. It's to be in a public position and have a lot of people have opinions about you is just an incredible and amazing thing. And this is where I really cultivated the new relationship with it. So I'd like to share that with you, not to blather on endlessly about myself, so that perhaps we can all collectively and individually cultivate a new relationship with criticism that looks like loving and serving all. Because I've got news for you. If you want to adjust for every person who criticizes you, you'll wear yourself out. If you want to defend against every person who criticizes against you, you will also wear yourself out. The thing to do is to become so empowered that the criticism can slide just right off of you. And that is a beautiful thing. And that you can love the critic, love your enemies, bless those that curse you. So what I've found, I'm going to use a specific example. I get two criticisms a lot. One is that I'm too raunchy, too bawdy for church, which is, it's true. And the other is that I'm not friendly, which is, well, yeah, it's okay. If you're one of the people who thinks I'm not friendly, I hear you. I'm not friendly. I'm really not. I'm not. Just, you know, I'm not. I've never been friendly. I've always been shy. Every group that I'm in, I'm sort of on the outside of. And my sisters don't think I'm friendly. My sisters get mad at me because when we have parties and I don't feel like talking anymore, I go and clean the dishes because I like that. I like to be by myself. My husband doesn't even think I'm friendly because I'm always isolating, right? I'm always isolating. I'm always going into the room and reading and working and all that stuff. I don't know. We'll talk when we get home. Maybe you do think I'm friendly. But you recognize what I said. Yeah. I could be friendlier. I could be more present. But anyway, I heard this feedback and hearing that I wasn't friendly. And of course, again, the knee-jerk reaction for me and for a lot of us is like, uh-oh, I'm not friendly. So-and-so thinks I'm not friendly. I better be really nice to that person. Hi, Doreen. How are you? Am I friendly enough for you now? Okay. Yeah. She just said, get away from me. Yeah, kind of like that, right? And that doesn't work very well. It doesn't work very well, as we can see. Thank you for that, Doreen. So trying to be what other people want me to be, again, it doesn't work very well. But what does work really, really well is to tell the truth. To tell the truth and to say, okay, Bonnie, somebody has said you are not friendly. Are you friendly? And I have to kind of go, well, not always, you know. Sometimes I'm not friendly. That person is right. That takes away all of the defensiveness. It takes away all of the anger. It takes away all of the need to people please. It's just like, yeah, I get to be who I am. I get to be not as friendly as that person needs me to be. But then I recognize in that statement that friendly or not friendly is a relative term. I am more friendly than some people. I asked myself to think of three people that I was more friendly than, and I came up with Hitler, Stalin and Jeffrey Dahmer. Thank you. So they've been on my mind lately. But anyway, so when you start to learn that friendliness is a relative term, that anything that you are accused of, anything that is a comparison, means that you are in the world of the relative versus the world of the absolute, versus the world of the absolute that embraces everything, then you are in a position to love. You are in a position to say, wow, you know what? I really am not as friendly as you might want me to be, but I know that there is an infinite source for you, and if you're looking for friendship, you can find it. You can find it. Because not only is that person, are you feeling like that person needs to validate you, that person is feeling like you need to validate them. They are barking up the wrong tree. They are looking for you as their source. And what a great way to remind people that God is their source. The universe is their source. There are an infinite number of friendly people around, and as we open to receive, as we give friendship, as we give whatever it is we are seeking, we find it. Okay, you got that? Okay, so all y'all, if people are critical of us, we look at it and we ask ourselves, is it true? And if it is true, it's probably not a big deal. It's just the way you were made. I was made the way I am, not as friendly as some people, because I like to work with theories and systems, and I like to be alone, and I like to contemplate deeply, and sometimes being around other people is not conducive to that. So just completely accept yourself where you are. We forgive ourselves for where we are and who we are. And then we recognize that it's a relative term, and that helps bring clarity to the idea of this thing that we've been labeled, that yes, it's true, and it's also not true. You know that is a sign that we're in absolute reality, right? When it's a paradox, when it's simultaneously true and not true. It just depends on your perspective, right? So there's that. There is loving those who are difficult to love simply by working on ourselves, by bringing up the spaciousness that we are, knowing that we are mostly empty space. We are truly mostly empty space, and that nothing can reject us. You know, like this room is empty space, and if you come in and you're not friendly and your hair looks bad or you're wearing clothes that aren't stylish or whatever, this space is not going to spit you out, right? And our bodies are mostly empty space, so we can accept and be that place that is aware yet unaffected by everything. Aware yet unaffected. I remember that from studying the Sedona Method. Aware yet unaffected. That is who we truly are. And the other gift about criticism is that if it can move you into the recognition and the remembrance of who you truly are, then it is a blessing. That is a blessing. That's why I said I have a new relationship with critics now. And it's a good thing because we're about to change everything in the social hall, so here I am. Go for it. So there's that. There's dealing with difficult people. And then there's serving in places where it's difficult to serve. Serving where you may not really want to serve. This week I had jury duty. I had jury duty, and I had already decided the talk topic, love all, serve all, and I just kept saying it to myself over and over and over again, love all, serve all. My objecting ego would come in and say, even in jury duty, you don't really want to do jury duty. Nope, love all, serve all. What? Love all, serve all, okay? Even in jury duty. And I have to say, it was super fun. I had the best time at jury duty. I'll tell you just the three top things. One was sitting at a table with a bunch of people, and I went to the cafeteria, and I said, can I bring anybody anything? Can I bring anybody anything? And they looked at me like I was on drugs. Like, what? Another was walking into the courtroom. I got called for a trial, and the guy holding the door open was wearing a three-piece suit looking very dignified, and he's going, I feel like the, he was holding the door for a long time, and he's like, I feel like the greeter at Walmart. And I go, can I have a hug? he didn't say yes. But my very... But my very favorite thing was when I was sitting in the room where you get to work. I brought my laptop with me, and it's the room where you're supposed to be quiet. But there were these two young men, these two beautiful African-American young men that were having a a very loud conversation about one of my favorite things, which is television. They were talking about television, and I kept eavesdropping and dropping in comments now and then, but I was also trying to work, and I felt myself wanting to get a little riled that I couldn't work as well because they were talking loudly, but they were so sweet and so cute and so innocent that I just was sort of delighted at the same time. Well, then one of them brought up the TV show Breaking Bad, and I had to turn to them and I said, that TV show, to me, is the best TV show ever. Nice show about cooking meth, but... and this is the part that just touched me so deeply. One of the men stopped and he said, no, you're wrong. And I went, oh, really? He goes, no, you're wrong. That show is the Bible. You're right. It is kind of the standard of excellence in terms of television and writing and acting. So, love all, serve all. You know, get ourselves in position. Somebody was complaining about being in the traffic the other day. I've cured fear of flying by being of service in planes. If we set our intention to just love and serve, everything falls into place because, again, it brings us into that absolute reality where all is well and where everything is accepted, where we are that place that is aware yet unaffected. We are the infinite subject in that moment when we choose to love all and serve all. And by the way, speaking of friendliness, I think I was quite friendly at jury duty. Something new. Now, there's one more thing. Sometimes there are situations that are just so difficult and so toxic and so unfortunate. Does service always look like just being loving and stepping back and breathing and allowing things to be? Sometimes it requires that we do set a boundary. Sometimes it requires that we do step up in love and kindness and firmness. And Jennifer Luce is going to tell us what that looks like. Oh, you have, no, go ahead, okay. Sorry. Oh, good, Kenny is good, yes. At that, excuse me.
Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Can you guys all take a deep breath with me? That'll make me feel better. Thank you, that helped. So I'm gonna begin by sharing that it takes a lot for me to get upset, let alone get angry. I don't like confrontation. It's very low on my favorite pastimes. And so I've realized that ignorance and inequality are the two things that bring me to all of those places. And so recently I was at a department store and I was in line, and the line was really long. It was just taking a long time, and I wasn't in a hurry, so it really wasn't that big of a deal. And there were all sorts of people around. And in front of me, there was a black woman. And behind me, there was a Hispanic gentleman. And then there were two white men, and there were other people. And I share that because it's part of the story later on. And so the two white men that were together, I noticed that they had a variety of tattoos on them. And one of them had a tattoo on the back of his arms, and on one side it said white, and on the other side it said power. And on the back of his head he had a swastika, and then the other gentleman had a Confederate flag tattoo on like his neck back area, or head area. So I immediately was upset seeing that, but I didn't say anything. I just stood in line, and they start talking rather loudly. But they start talking and about women and degrading women and all sorts of like sexual expletives. And the whole time I was just kind of rolling my eyes, looking forward, just ignoring it. It was making me very upset, but I didn't say anything. Nobody else was saying anything either. And so this was going on for a while. The line was very long and moving very slowly. A thought crossed my mind, I could just leave. I don't need these items. I just want to leave. I was upset. And I was like, no, just stay there. And they keep talking and talking and talking. And all of a sudden, they have like Muzak playing. and some sort of like hip-hop music. It's pretty low, but you can hear it, starts playing, and I personally enjoy that music, but to each their own. And so one of the guys said to the other person, "What kind of music is this?" In like a really negative tone. And his friend said, "It must be some type of N-word music." And I lost it. I started getting really, really upset. I had tears in my eyes out of like anger and frustration. And I turned around, and in like my strongest outdoor voice, I said, "That's enough." And nobody said anything. And they look at me, like, you know, "What are you talking about?" You know, and they start saying all these things, and one of them is very sexually explicit to me about me. And so the woman in front of me turns around and says, "It's time for you to get out," and points to the door. This is the black woman. And they look at her. They do not use any derogatory language, but they are very rude, saying, "Who are you to tell me what to do?" type of attitude. And she very calmly, very, very kindly, is dressed, you know, regular clothes, has a sweatshirt on, and goes like this with her sweatshirt to open it, and she has a badge and a gun. And so it was a very dramatic situation, as you can imagine. Things like this don't happen every day for me. And I was just shocked. I couldn't say anything. And so the guys didn't say anything. They put their stuff down and they left. And right before that, she did say, "You know, you need to leave now. If you don't, I'm going to charge you with so-and-so penal codes for sexual language in front of minors," because there were children present. And so they left. She turns around, back in line. And I'm just like, so I'm shaking. I'm so upset. And I said to her, I said, "Thank you." And she goes, "Thank you." And I said, I was so upset, but I didn't really have words. And she goes, "I was just trying to shop." Like, she's like, "I just wanted to shop today. This is, And so after that situation, everyone went on their merry way. I finally got to pay for my items. And afterwards, I got home and I was sharing this with my husband, and I was so upset. So, so, so upset. And I understand my privilege. I understand I am white. I understand the circumstance. And so I was reflecting back and almost judging myself. Like, was I the right ally in that situation? Did I do the right thing? Did I say the right thing? Was there some sort of like subconscious white savior complex coming through? And so I finally just like sat with it and meditated a little bit and realized, no, she was an angel disguised as a police officer. She was God disguised as a police officer. And God was just coming through me to say, that's it. That's my breaking point. And so I truly believe that God is with us all the time, and God is in those details and in those moments. Because I don't know what I would have done. I probably would have left, because it was just an awful circumstance. So love God is in the hard things and in the good things. So that was my takeaway.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's beautiful. Thank you. And Jen, through her honesty and through the African Americans' gesture, she gave them, that was love. It's love. It's love to tell people that they can't treat others badly. That's a form of love, and that's a form of service. So here we are. Let's turn within, and we'll pray. And we'll take some of this message home with us to our lives.